Good morning. This is Artificially Intelligent News for Wednesday, August 26, 2026. I'm Mark Ellison. This program is created with AI and fact-checked against authoritative reporting available this morning. The Supreme Court has cleared a preliminary obstacle to President Trump's executive order restricting mail voting. But the order is not automatically enforced for November's midterm elections. The justices said it was too early when Democratic-led states first sued in June. That ruling effectively revives the legal fight on a very compressed calendar. A federal judge had frozen the order for the election, and the states are now asking the lower court to reconsider its response after the final rule was issued. The administration's order would impose new federal requirements on mail voting. Election officials and voting rights groups say the timing is especially consequential because some states will begin sending ballots to overseas and military voters in early September. The Supreme Court did not decide whether the order itself is lawful. That question remains for the lower courts, and no voting procedure changes immediately because of Monday's order. The timing matters because election administration is already underway. States need to prepare ballots and tell voters what rules apply. The ruling leaves the central legal questions unresolved while lower courts consider the final order. In a separate administration development, the State Department is preparing a potentially sweeping visa action. Documents reviewed by the Associated Press and two U.S. officials indicate the government could revoke business and tourist visas held by up to 200,000 people who have sought or are seeking asylum in the United States. The action would cover certain B1 and B2 visas issued between 2016 and 2026. The department says it is working with Homeland Security to identify people who entered as short-term visitors and then sought asylum. Officials say a visa revocation would not necessarily mean immediate deportation. Many people with pending asylum cases could instead lose their visitor status while their immigration cases continue. Visitor status and an asylum claim can involve different legal processes. That is why officials describe revocation as a change in visa status rather than an automatic decision on whether an applicant can remain while a pending asylum case is decided. The plan has not been formally announced and could be revised or challenged in court. The State Department would not confirm a final number, saying any revocations would occur on a rolling basis. If implemented at the scale described, it would be the largest single mass visa revocation in U.S. history. Trade tensions with Canada are escalating again. Canada announced retaliatory tariffs on roughly $20 billion worth of U.S. goods after the Trump administration imposed 50% tariffs on Canadian goods over the weekend following failed trade talks. Ottawa's new measures cover steel, dairy products, appliances, farm equipment, seafood, cheese, clothing, cosmetics, and toilet paper. Some duties could reach 50%. Canadian Finance Minister François-Philippe Champagne said the government did not choose the conflict. President Trump's administration has argued that tariffs are needed to reshape trade terms and protect U.S. industries. Tariffs are taxes on imports, and companies may absorb some costs, pass them to buyers, or change suppliers. That means the effect of a trade dispute can reach beyond the industries named in the tariff lists. The stakes are significant because the United States and Canada have one of the world's largest trading relationships and deeply integrated supply chains. Canadian officials say their response is designed to match the U.S. measures and pressure affected industries. A prolonged dispute could raise costs for manufacturers, retailers, and consumers on both sides of the border. A California jury has delivered a closely watched verdict involving social media and young users. Meta and Google-owned YouTube were found liable in a case brought by a 20-year-old woman who said the companies designed their platforms to hook children without adequately protecting their well-being. The jury found the companies negligent and concluded that the negligence was a substantial factor in the plaintiff's harm. It assigned 70% responsibility to Meta and 30% to YouTube. Jurors awarded $6 million in damages and recommended another $3 million in punitive damages. The judge retains authority over the final award. The verdict concerns the evidence in one case. It will be subject to the judge's review and potentially an appeal, which is why it does not automatically decide the many related cases still pending. Meta and YouTube both disagree with the verdict and say they are considering their legal options, including appeals. TikTok and Snap settled before this trial began. The case is important because thousands of similar lawsuits are pending, although one verdict does not itself establish a nationwide rule or guarantee the same outcome in other cases. There is also a serious public health update from Pennsylvania. State health officials say two unvaccinated residents of Lancaster County have died after measles infections. They are the first reported measles-related deaths in the United States this year. Officials released no identifying details. The deaths come during the nation's worst measles year since 1991. the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention had recorded 2,777 cases as of last Thursday, according to the report. That already exceeds last year's total. Measles can spread quickly where people lack protection, which is why public health officials focus on vaccination coverage as well as the count of confirmed infections. Measles can be prevented by vaccination, and health officials emphasize that it is highly contagious. The United States eliminated continuous domestic measles spread in 2000, but vaccination coverage has declined in some communities. International health officials are scheduled to review later this year whether the United States and Mexico have retained their measles-free status. In Montana, investigators are working to establish the full circumstances of a devastating family killing near Billings. Police say 8 people, including 4 children, were killed at a home Sunday evening. The suspected shooter later died from what investigators said was a self-inflicted gunshot wound. The home caught fire and burned to its foundation, complicating the investigation. A family member identified the suspected shooter as a 44-year-old relative. Authorities have confirmed the death toll but have not publicly established a motive. The victims spanned 4 generations of one blended family. We will leave the story there out of respect for the families and the community. And in Washington, a legal watchdog has filed bar complaints against U.S. Attorney Jeanine Pirro and 2 colleagues over their unsuccessful effort to seek an indictment of 6 Democratic lawmakers. The lawmakers appeared in a video calling on members of the military to resist unlawful orders. The Legal Accountability Center alleges that Pirro's office abused prosecutorial authority in pursuing what it calls meritless indictments. Those are allegations in an ethics complaint, not a disciplinary finding. Pirro and her colleagues have not been found to have violated professional rules. The complaints were filed with authorities in New York and Virginia, which will determine whether to investigate. Turning overseas, Iran and Oman have announced talks on a phased effort to manage shipping through the Strait of Hormuz. The waterway remains largely closed nearly 6 months after the Iran war began, and the disruption has affected global oil flows, shipping costs, and fuel prices. The Strait of Hormuz links the Persian Gulf to the Gulf of Oman and sea routes beyond it. Its importance comes from the energy exports and commercial shipments that normally pass through this narrow waterway. The two governments said they are considering a joint temporary navigational corridor and mine-clearing work. Iran's deputy foreign minister said inbound traffic into the Persian Gulf could use Iranian waters, while outbound traffic would use both Iranian and Omani waters. Technical negotiations on a more permanent arrangement are expected to continue. The talks came after an oil tanker was disabled off Oman's coast in an attack. The British Maritime Authority said the crew was safe. Before the war, roughly 1/5 of the world's traded oil passed through the strait. It remains unclear whether the United States will accept the emerging arrangement, but any safer route would matter well beyond the region because energy and shipping markets depend on the passage. Ukraine remains under heavy pressure as the war with Russia continues. The Associated Press reports that Russian attacks killed at least 10 people in Ukraine in the latest wave, while President Volodymyr Zelensky said Moscow is receiving more North Korean missiles. Ukraine has continued long-range drone strikes against oil and industrial facilities inside Russia. Those attacks aim to disrupt military supply and energy revenue, while Russia's missile and drone attacks continue to damage Ukrainian cities and infrastructure. The claims and casualty totals are difficult to verify independently in real time, and both sides' battlefield statements should be treated with caution. The fighting continues far beyond the front line, with both sides targeting military-linked infrastructure. The pace of attacks makes independent confirmation especially difficult in the immediate aftermath. What is clear is that there is no sign of a negotiated settlement, and the conflict remains a major demand on European security and Western support. Now to the economy and markets. These are final closing levels from Tuesday's completed U.S. regular trading session, not futures or intraday prices. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 160.24 points, or 0.3%, to close at 53,577.40. The S&P 500 gained 24.42 points, or 0.3%, ending at 7,677.28. The Nasdaq Composite added 171.11 points, or 0.7%, closing at 26,151.30. Stocks were helped by falling oil prices and easing bond market concerns, while investors looked ahead to Nvidia's earnings and this week's inflation and Federal Reserve signals. Closing stock prices describe one completed trading session. The confidence survey reflects how consumers see their own finances and the economy. Taken together, they show investors and households responding to overlapping concerns, not necessarily reaching the same conclusion. For households, the more immediate picture remains uneasy. The Conference Board says its Consumer Confidence Index slipped to 89.4 in August from 90.2 in July. That is the lowest reading in 7 months. Views of current conditions improved slightly, but expectations for the months ahead weakened. Survey responses repeatedly mentioned prices, gasoline, food, trade, jobs, and geopolitics. U.S. gasoline prices have remained above $4 a gallon amid the Iran conflict. The latest PCE inflation report, the Federal Reserve's preferred gauge, is due later today. Markets will be watching it closely after June's annual reading came in at 3.7%. The labor market is part of the concern. July payrolls fell by 23,000, and revisions removed 103,000 jobs from the previous 2 months. The unemployment rate fell to 4.1%, though the report said fewer people were participating in the labor force. None of those figures alone settles the economic outlook, but together they help explain why confidence remains subdued. In sports, a rapidly changing college eligibility dispute has produced a notable response from two of the biggest conferences. The SEC adopted a rule Tuesday barring athletes who have been drafted by or listed on the rosters of NFL, NBA, or WNBA teams from returning to compete in the conference. The Big Ten adopted a similar rule for football earlier in the day. Its penalties can include a half-season suspension for a head coach and a fine for a school. The SEC rule extends across the sports it covers, while the Big Ten is expected to consider other sports later. The action follows a burst of court rulings, emergency meetings, and efforts by players released from professional teams to return to college. LSU had been adding undrafted players released after NFL tryouts. The ACC and Big 12 were expected to discuss the issue today. The rulings followed a period when player movement made questions of eligibility immediate for schools. The new conference policies establish internal limits, while the wider NCAA dispute is still unresolved. The larger NCAA legal fight over athlete eligibility is still unresolved, but the conference rules are an immediate effort to set boundaries before football season begins. At the U.S. Open, the highly anticipated mixed doubles partnership of Serena Williams and Carlos Alcaraz is over. Belinda Bencic of Switzerland and Flavio Cobolli of Italy beat Williams and Alcaraz 5-4 in a first-set tiebreak and 4-1 in the quarterfinals. Williams had returned to the U.S. Open after 4 years away, and Alcaraz was playing his first competitive tennis since a wrist injury in April. Their opening round win created a major event atmosphere at Arthur Ashe Stadium, but Bencic and Cobolli handled the key points in their second match of the day. The partnership drew attention because of Williams's return and Alcaraz's recent absence. In this format, a short match can turn on a handful of points, and Bencic and Cobolli advanced. They now face Elena Svitolina of Ukraine and Gael Monfils of France in the semifinals. Svitolina and Monfils, who are married, reached the Final Four with a 5-4-4-5-10-8 win over Katerina Siniakova and Henry Patton. The winning mixed doubles team will earn $1 million. A quick results roundup now. In Major League Baseball, the Houston Astros beat the New York Yankees 9-7. The Los Angeles Dodgers edged the Atlanta Braves 4-3. In the WNBA, the Connecticut Sun beat the Chicago Sky 87-81. The Dallas Wings defeated the Portland Fire 96-78, and the Washington Mystics beat the Phoenix Mercury 94-84. Finally, the music world is mourning Dolly Parton. Her publicist says the singer, songwriter, actor, entrepreneur, and philanthropist died Tuesday in Nashville after a brief battle with cancer. She was 80. Parton's career reached far beyond country music. She wrote hundreds of songs, including Jolene, Coat of Many Colors, and I Will Always Love You. Her work sold more than 100 million records worldwide, and her songs have been streamed more than 1 billion times. She also became a familiar screen presence through projects including 9 to 5 and built a wide-ranging business around Dollywood and other ventures. Her songs carried across genres and generations, and her public work brought a separate legacy into view. The Imagination Library connected her success to a sustained effort to put books in children's hands. Just as enduring was her philanthropic work. Through the Imagination Library, Parton helped provide free books to children, an effort shaped by her father's difficulty with reading. Her public image was joyful and self-aware, but her influence was substantial. A songwriter of rare range, a defining performer, and a public figure whose charitable work reached families far beyond her home state of Tennessee. That is your Wednesday briefing. Follow Artificially Intelligent News and share this calm morning summary with one person who would value it. I'm Mark Ellison. Thanks for listening. Check out the article about AIN on AIbusiness.vc. Find the link in today's episode description.